Her heart was pounding, her breath stuck in her chest, and she wasn't sure why. Mikkel held his glass out to her.
Been a day, hmm?
It took her a moment to realize he was offering it to her. She accepted it, staring down at the yellow liquid, garnished with a bright cherry and a twisted orange slice. He must have just made it, because it seemed like he hadn't even taken a sip yet. But he didn't get up to make himself another. The glass was cold, little diamond patterns wrapping around the sides, poking into her palm.
Whiskey sour, Mikkel explained, watching her calmly.
She sipped it and then licked her lips to savor the taste. It was rich and mellow, with a zesty tang, a hint of sweetness and an undercurrent of bitterness to balance it out. She liked the drink, but she had spent quite a lot of time training with Nico over the past month, growing familiar with the scent of whiskey in her nose, and the taste of it filling her throat. Mikkel slipped a leather bookmark into his book, closed his laptop, and set the book on top of it, his gaze speculative as he watched her savor his drink.
The track team approached you through a beta.
Kalen cut straight to the point, shifting in his chair to give her his full attention. He added his book to the stack by his elbow without marking his page. Her stomach immediately churned, and she focused her attention on the bright orange slice in her drink as she nodded. Crow said they would make their offer tomorrow, but that I wouldn't be able to refuse. Kalen affirmed.
That's how it works.
He wasn't wearing his contact. She hadn't noticed when she walked in, but she glanced up as he spoke, and now she was suddenly staring at him, her lips parted in surprise, unable to tear her attention away from his honey brown iris. Familiar gold specks watched her in return, still circled by his gold alpha ring.
They irritate my fucking eyes,
he explained, taking a swig from his glass.
Sorry,
she fiddled with Mikkel's glass, not sure what else to say.
Not your fault.
He shared a quick look with Mikkel.
And the beta was right. You can't refuse the track team. You've seen how they recruit people. Playing hard to get only increases the amount of collateral they gather to control you. You need to come across as easy to control.
She nodded, sipping more of the sweet and tangy liquid to calm her rioting nerves.
What happens when they recruit me?
You'll have to wait until someone offers to become your sponsor. Usually, they parade new recruits through the Stone Dahlia for one night, and then they aren't allowed back in until a sponsorship offer is put before the track team by someone who is already a member. Or, you could find your own sponsor and avoid all that. Since we're so close to the end of term, you could probably push it out until the start of next year. The club doesn't operate over the summer break.
A sponsor?
She grew still, glancing between him and Mikkel, waiting for further explanation. Kalen closed his eyes, rubbing the bridge of his nose, and then he set his drink down, leaning forward, his face canted toward hers, his elbows notched over his strong thighs.
You have to be sponsored by a fully-fledged member to get full membership to the Stone Dahlia,
he explained.
You're the sponsor's responsibility for a year before you get your own access card. It's their way of making sure you're properly taught the rules, and also that you stay quiet.
Okay. She sensed there was more, and for some reason, both of the professors were finding it difficult to have the conversation. There was no small amount of unease emanating from them, arcing into her and dancing around inside her chest.
Either one of us could sponsor you.
Mikkel was leaning back where Kalen was leaning forward.
But that would mean you can't step into the club without us.
That doesn't sound so bad.
Her confusion deepened. If she had to stick to anyone inside the club, she would prefer it to be one of them. They were strong, stern, and dominant, but they were still gifted. They weren't secondary citizens because they weren't even citizens, and if humans ran the Stone Dahlia, then there would be people down there far more powerful than Kalen and Mikkel.
The club is large.
Kalen reclined again,
snatching up his drink like he was annoyed at the spark of hopefulness that had briefly shot through her, and might have shone on her face.
"It encompasses varied activities. Most of them illegal. That's where the money is made."
"Do you do illegal things?" she asked. His lips twitched, and Mikkel let out a low laugh.
"No, I don't."
It was Kaelin who answered, Mikkel remaining quiet.
"But that doesn't mean other people don't."
He let her absorb that before continuing.
"What Mikkel and Oscar do is too dangerous. You don't have to end up in the same part of the club as your sponsor. You could transfer out to a different section after your sponsorship period. But more often than not, people stay with their sponsors after the year is up. So we don't think it's a good idea for you to shadow either of them."
"Elijah and Gabriel are options," Mikkel added, before Isabel could utter a single, surprised word.
"But they both entertain in the same section as Kaelin. He sponsored both of them. I sponsored Oscar. So it doesn't matter if you're with me or them. You'll still be in the same section,"
Kaelin summarized. "And the others?" she rasped quietly. "Has everyone been recruited?"
"Not yet."
Kaelin's frown was deep.
"They usually don't start recruiting in the first 2 years. Oscar, Elijah, and Gabriel were special cases. And now you. I suspect they didn't want to sit on you. You're too unpredictable."
"I'm very predictable," she countered.
"That's so."
Kaelin's firm lips quirked. His easy attitude made her suddenly self-conscious, her attention snapping to Mikkel again. Kaelin had asked her to speak to him informally when they were alone, but Mikkel hadn't. "Am I..." she swallowed past the crack in her voice. "Should I be calling you Professor?"
"While I'm enabling underage drinking?"
Mikkel winced.
"I don't fucking think so. When you're outside this room, yes."
She rolled her tongue against the roof of her mouth, trying to keep the surprise off her face. "So, what do you mean by entertain? What do the gifted actually do down there?"
"Some of them just fill the space,"
Mikkel answered,
"flitting from section to section and socializing, until someone important decides to spend a small fortune to get all their attention for a night."
"You mean like..." she immediately interrupted, horrified, but Mikkel was already shaking his head.
"They just have dinner and drinks, or watch the other entertainment in private booths. The humans quite literally pay just for their company. We're talking about the most popular, the most famous gifted at Ironside. The biggest celebrities in the world, other than the icons themselves. People pay through the roof just to be part of the scene, and we're the ones who create the scene."
"What do you both do?" She lifted a finger from her glass, gesturing between the two of them nervously. They were dancing around the point too much, and it was making her antsy.
"What I do isn't exactly legal," Mikkel admitted. "There's an unregulated ring down there. We fight, and the humans bet on us. It's one of the most popular sections of the club."
"Do they make you do that?" she asked quietly, unable to read his face. "And Oscar?"
"No."
His eyes flashed in amusement.
"I was originally with Kaelin, but when I realized they were trying to recruit Oscar, I switched over. I thought it would be a good outlet for him."
"You get beat up for Oscar?"
she blurted, before sinking her teeth into her lower lip, her face flooding with color. Mikkel only regarded her with cool amusement. "No, Carter. That would imply I lose. I never lose."
"Not even against Nico?"
His amusement deepened. "You think Nico was born like that? Someone had to teach him."
"Right." She shuffled back on the stool. "Of course." She was starting to sweat. She crossed her legs distractedly and then uncrossed them again, the giant sweatpants making her movements ungainly. "What about you?" She barely managed to flick her eyes up to Kaelin long enough to let him know she was speaking to him before she hid away behind the sweep of her eyelashes again.
I also hurt people,
he admitted, trying to make his voice soft. Instead, it just came out as a low, growly rumble.
But they ask me to. The club has fetish rooms.
Like whips and leather? Her eyes widened, twitching up to his, except they didn't make it past his angular chin.
I'm sure there's someone dressed in leather in one of the rooms, and yes, I've used whips before. Members of the club can assign themselves to a fetish room, and the humans will either pay to play or pay to watch. Some of the rooms are so popular they have wait lists months long. All of us in Dorm A send our Ironside stipends home, and those of us who work in the Stone Dahlia make our earnings available to the others.
So that's how the boys were affording expensive gifts from Ironside Row. She finally managed to hold Kaelin's stare, her attention flitting over the stern mask of his features. He was watching her carefully, warily, flashing the tiniest spark of amusement that disappeared from his eyes when he blinked it away. You said Elijah and Gabriel work with you?
Not with me, exactly,
Kaelin specified.
They run a room together.
What's the, what are they, you know?
Ask me properly, anyway,
Kaelin suggested. He seemed to be trying to speak lightly and casually, likely for her sake, but his voice was too deep and textured, his stare far too heavy and focused. Mikkel arched a sharp brow at her, somehow able to prompt her without a word, like he was giving her a shove in the middle of her back. What's their fetish? She quickly asked, hiding her blush behind Mikkel's glass as she hurriedly swallowed the rest of his drink. The cherry slipped into her mouth, and she caught the stem, sucking off the whiskey flavor coating its skin. For a single, insane moment, she wondered if that was what it would taste like if she kissed Nico. Tart and smoky. And then she realized she was thinking ridiculous thoughts, and she quickly shoved them out of her brain. And then Mikkel decided to drop a bomb on her.
Degradation,
he said plainly.
Humiliation. Sexual and physical torture.
Her mouth fell open, and the cherry tumbled onto her lap. Both of the professors watched quietly as it rolled along her thigh and tipped onto the floor, bouncing twice. She had so many questions. They all tripped over themselves on the tip of her tongue, giving her the precious few seconds she needed to realize that she shouldn't voice any of them. She had no right to judge what people chose to do of their own free will. If a human wanted Elijah and Gabriel to humiliate and torture them, then fine, right? And if Elijah and Gabriel wanted to... She swallowed, carefully setting her glass on the table beside Kaelin's. She fiddled with her fingers in her lap as she waited for them to continue. They were trying to baby-step her into this conversation, and she had already made it uncomfortable enough. Kaelin's eyes traced her face, reading something there that sparked satisfaction in his expression. He licked his lips, saying,
My specialty is shibari. It's a form of rope bondage. It's not all about sex. It's an art form, a kind of meditation for some people.
Rope, bondage, and torture. Artistic expression and humiliation. Degradation and meditation. She bobbed her head, trying to visualize what Kaelin was talking about before realizing they were laying out her options before her, waiting for her to decide. She could shadow Gabriel or Elijah and watch them torture people, or she could shadow Kaelin and watch him tie people up. It didn't sound like Mikkel and Oscar were on the table as options, and she was coming to the uncomfortable realization that Mikkel might have been as scarred as he was from those fights, and she wasn't sure she had the stomach to watch it happen night after night. "How often?" she asked quietly.
"Generally once a week."
Mikkel tipped out of his chair, leaning over her to snatch the cherry from the floor. His stormy scent flooded over her as he popped it into his empty glass and resettled in his armchair.
"Kaelin could always transfer somewhere else, but his fetish room might present a more private and controlled environment for you, if slightly confronting. He has a firm hand over his audience. He can't control everyone else in the wider club if he decides to become a floater for you. We don't know exactly why they wanted to recruit you so early, so playing it safe might be a good idea."
"Mm-hmm." She chewed on her lip as she nervously turned to properly face Kaelin. She wasn't sure if there was any kind of formality required, but she didn't want to do it wrong.
"Will you be my sponsor?"
His lips firmed into an unyielding line, approval rushing over his expression fast enough that she was sure she had misread it when it disappeared. He wasn't saying anything, and she wondered if she had to say more to appease their concerns. Whatever they were feeling, it wasn't negative, because there was only her own nervousness churning in her stomach. Either they were feeling nothing at all, or they were expelling an impressive amount of effort to keep their feelings under lock so that she wouldn't be influenced during what was clearly an important conversation for them. That fact alone stopped her from lowering her wall and reaching out to feel their emotions against their will. Kaelin let out a short breath.
"If you were one of our alphas, this conversation wouldn't even be happening. We would decide what was best for you based on your individual capabilities and needs, and we would assign you to whoever suits you best. That's how we work here. It's the only way any of this works." "We're at a bit of a loss,"
Mikkel added, his tone low.
"We don't know enough about you. If we assign you to Kaelin and then later find out that you can't handle..."
"I can handle anything," she interrupted, straightening her spine. "Put me in the ring with Oscar. I don't care."
Mikkel's grin twitched into being, his eyes sparkling.
"Maybe another time. Please understand what we're saying here, Isabel. We're talking about throwing a virgin into a kink club and asking her to swim."
She opened her mouth and then closed it again, an embarrassed sound catching in the back of her throat.
"I'm not a child," she muttered. "And I have some experience. What makes you think I'm a virgin? Because nobody would want to date a Sigma?"
The last part was tacked on with a wince, and she wished she could have taken it back as soon as she said it.
"Because you're the color of the rug,"
Kaelin remarked calmly, pointing to the Persian carpet beneath them, where scarlet thread twisted in bright patterns.
"And Moses was your first kiss, wasn't he?"
"Maybe,"
she firmed her lips.
"You alphas really like to gossip."
Kaelin scoffed.
"It's our job to monitor them. And now it's our job to monitor you. If Moses was your first kiss, who would you have had time to fuck between then and now?"
He frowned, eyes flicking over her face.
"Not to mention, you just flinched when I said fuck."
She tossed her hands up.
"Test me, then. Give me a kink exam."
Mikkel's smirk turned into a full-blown smile, his scars twisting around his face, his mismatched eyes crinkling at the sides. She'd seen a picture of his full smile once. The comments had been brutal, saying he was unnaturally ugly, saying that alphas were supposed to have perfect skin. None of the comments explained why they thought all alphas should have perfect skin, so it wasn't likely that they all knew about the alpha healing abilities. Perhaps their healing abilities made all the other alphas who had starred on the Ironside show over the years appear somewhat perfect. Mikkel's smile was a short, aching flash of nostalgia, a brief window into a version of him that had once smiled and laughed often and easily, a version of him that was now dead. His smile was a memorial, and it was too sad to be beautiful, but her heart ached as much as it did for one of Theodore's picture-perfect superstar smiles. Kaylin laughed, but it died too quickly, the deep, husky sound fading away and leaving her feeling like she had been dropped from a cliff with the way her stomach swooped.
"There's one more problem," he said. "Mates are possessive by nature. I'm sure you would know that, your parents being who they are. When Theodore finds out what you're doing in the club, and he will, how do you think he's going to react?"
She frowned. "Well, wouldn't I just be standing in a corner or something? Or will I be, like, your assistant?"
"You'll do whatever I tell you to do."
The silence that stretched between them was heavy, making her clothes feel too hot and cumbersome. "What will you tell me to do?" She tried to peer past the mask of his calm composure. She was finally beginning to feel little trickles of their emotion. Drips of discomfort and feelings of being trapped. They were being forced into this by the track team, and they didn't like it.
"To not touch anyone, talk to anyone, or look at anyone, except me."
Kaylin's voice had lowered to a growl, the words delivered to her with some sort of weighted, grave subtext.
"Isabel."
Mikkel drew her attention immediately, and she turned her head his way.
"Do you think you can do that?"
She lifted a shoulder. "I don't really have any friends here anyway, except Theodore and Killian, and Kian, and Gabriel, I guess. And maybe Teak and Charlie, but they aren't even students." Both of them seemed mildly amused at her listing out everyone she might consider a friend.
"You won't be permitted to play,"
Mikkel emphasized the words carefully,
"or to experiment."
A sudden image of Kaylin wrapping her wrists with rope dropped like a cement block into her mind, crushing all rational thought. Her skin grew sensitive and hot, and the dull ache in her stomach briefly turned into a sharper pinch. "How is that fair?" she managed to get out, her voice strangled. "Do the others get to do whatever they want?"
"Elijah, Gabriel, and I do not have sex in the rooms,"
Kaylin rumbled. "But you do other things." She hated that she didn't know the specifics of what those things were. It made her sound so inexperienced. "What if I want to humiliate someone?"
"Try it out."
Kaylin leaned back, folding thick, muscled arms over his chest. His posture relaxed as he settled a hard stare on her.
"Insult me."
"You're bossy," she said immediately.
"You can do better than that," Mikkel goaded. "What else?"
"He's..." She trailed off, chewing on her lip. "Wonderful. Kaylin is wonderful. He saved her life."
"Say it to me, Carter."
Kaylin's voice was deepening, her surname slipping out like a whip. "You're not very good at modulating your tone." "Wow, way to go, Isabel. That'll teach him." Kaylin drew all the way forward, his arms uncrossing, his hand cupping her chin, his scent digging into her pores.
"Degradation isn't your thing, princess."
Despite the pitiful insult she had slung at him, his voice had turned into a very pleasant rumble. The pet name making her brain short-circuit as she tried to remember why it sounded familiar and where she had heard it before. The first time he taught her to climb. His touch was soft, barely brushing her skin as his thumb skirted along her jaw.
"You prefer to be praised, isn't that right?"
She found herself nodding, not entirely sure she understood what she was agreeing to. Praise sounded good. Better than humiliation, anyway. The purr of his voice combined with the intensity in his eyes was making her dizzy, his smoky vanilla scent flooding her senses. His thumb reached the edge of her jaw, right beneath her ear, and then he drew away, his hand falling back to his thigh. She blinked rapidly, jerking to her feet.
Fine.
The word tumbled out of her. It's not like I was going to have my first time in a secret society dungeon beneath the lake anyway. She laughed awkwardly, the sound weak.
Kaylin and Mikkel watched her with tensed bodies and hard eyes.
It just seems like a double standard, that's all. Gabriel, Elijah, and Oscar are clearly allowed to look at people and touch them and speak to them. Why can't I?
Because if anyone gets close to you, they're dead,
Mikkel said flatly. It didn't sound like a threat, just a simple fact.
It's only a matter of time before the other alphas are recruited into the Stone Dahlia. We can't have Theodore going feral or Oscar deciding to assert his dominance in public. The mate bond is repelled by outsiders touching what it assumes to be theirs.
I watch Wallace touch Theodore all the time, she returned.
You're practiced at managing your own emotions.
Mikkel was shaking his head.
Anyone else in your position would have had a complete mental breakdown at this point, but you've barely got a wobble in your step. The others aren't Sigmas. They don't have the same ability.
Sounds like an excuse, she wanted to say. Years of seeing her father lose control and having her mother blame it on his alpha instincts was niggling at her. But maybe Mikkel had a point. Not about them, but about her. She frowned, her feet brushing across the rug as she began to pace.
I can control my emotions because I had to.
The words spilled out of her without her permission, tumbling unfiltered and flopping onto the carpet before her agitated footsteps.
There wasn't any space for me and what I feel. It isn't because I'm a Sigma. It's because I was only allowed to be this small.
Her voice had risen, her fingers hovering an inch apart before her face as she whipped to face them.
And if I could make myself matter so little so that everyone else could matter so much, then anyone can. And if anyone can, then maybe all of you can make room for me.
Kaylin pulled in a deep breath, his scent like burnt sugar as it filled her lungs, curling around the room like smoke, an acrid bite to it that tasted like sulfur, which she attributed to Mikkel.
The boys are killing themselves every day to work out as much alpha aggression as they can,
Kaylin said calmly. He didn't sound angry at her, but his anger was there all the same, pounding into her skin with enough force to make her stumble.
And you're one of us now. That means nobody touches you, nobody hurts you, nobody makes you feel small. And that includes Braun fucking Carter. You're never going to be alone with your father again,
Mikkel added, a rough promise that raised the hairs on the back of her neck. She ducked her head down, shame dribbling through her. What happens if they don't train so hard?
They surge.
There was a note of warning in the way Mikkel spoke.
There's a part of the alpha brain that just seems to flick off, like a humanity switch. Suddenly, we're nothing but animals with entirely animal instincts. For most alphas, it isn't a problem,
Kaylin explained calmly, shaking out his cuffs. It was hard to imagine him losing control in any way.
But when large groups of us cohabitate for too long, it seems to make it happen more often. It was comfortably manageable, thanks to Elijah's plan and Mikkel's guidance. But adding a shared mate into the mix has basically electrocuted all those instincts we were trying to keep dormant. Nobody will hurt you, but they might hurt other people if they see someone as a threat to you, or if the bond is being defiled in any way. They won't be able to help themselves. And that includes women touching them, not just men touching you. Our instincts go both ways. Both scenarios are dangerous. You just haven't witnessed the discussions we've had with them that resembled the discussion we're having with you right now.
She frowned, gripping the back of her neck as her pacing slowed to a stop. If the bond can't stand being defiled by other people, then how can I handle Theo, Gabriel, and Elijah with their fake girlfriends? And why are they still carrying on with their fake girlfriends if it causes them so much distress? Kaelin stood up, straightening out his shirt, his thumbs smoothing over the material to tuck any loose fabric back beneath his belt, drawing her attention to the large stature of his body and the muscles that were briefly defined when the material pulled tight, even though it was a typical business shirt, an ironed fabric with enough structure that it definitely shouldn't have just given her an outline of abdominal muscles. He cleared his throat.
It's clear that you've been mistreated, Isabel. That's not what we were referring to earlier. Your Sigma ability is still an ability, even if you've had to use it for unfortunate purposes. Sigmas are incredibly strong-willed. Their mental fortitude is unparalleled. I'm not saying that you should be mistreated because you can handle it. I'm saying you've handled it better than an Alpha would have, because they don't have the same mental fortitude. And it's essential that we show the world just how well you can handle seeing the boys with their fake girlfriends, because we're playing a very delicate game here, trying to cover up the fact that you're actually half-bonded to every Alpha here. Any one of our boys would have snapped and snapped someone's jaw if they had to endure even a small fraction of what you have,
Mikhail added.
But that doesn't mean we aren't all training every day to maintain control over our impulses. None of us are using it as an excuse not to manage our aggression.
You told me today that I have to learn how to manage Oscar, she accused quietly.
And I've told him the same thing.
Mikhail's mouth hardened, tension lining his face.
You'll each need to figure out how to do that in your own ways, assuming neither of you are about to change.
He stared at her expectantly, waiting for a confirmation that she could be just as stubborn as Oscar. But she, stubbornly, didn't want to admit it.
I'll be your sponsor,
Kaelin announced, stepping around her and heading to the door.
But I'm also giving you a day to change your mind if you need to. Make sure you think this through. This isn't an option I would be giving any of the others, so take advantage of it.
Before he opened the door, he glanced back at her, waiting to see if she had any other questions. She nodded, saying a quiet good night before heading toward Killian's room. The lounge was empty, looking like a cleaning crew had slipped through while she had been in Kaelin's office. One probably had, or Gabriel had beaten them to it. She raised her fist to knock on Killian's door, but then figured he was probably already asleep since there was no light spilling out from beneath the door. She cracked it open, trying to keep quiet, and breathed a short sigh of relief when there was enough moonlight spilling through the wide bay windows to illuminate her steps as she crept toward his bed. It was neatly made, her hot water bottle on top of the covers waiting for her. Killian's form was stretched out on a brand new couch, a blanket tugged up over his hips, his chest bare, his pale skin flawless in the soft shadows. Every muscle sharp with definition, his hand resting on his stomach. Killian was an angel, dropped into the mortal world to make everyone else feel the sharp sting of inferiority and the sharper burn of want. She quickly looked away, climbing into his bed and hugging the hot water bottle against her stomach, as she texted the pictures of her flower bunches to Theodore and Moses with a simple, "Happy birthday," message for each of them. Theodore texted back almost immediately. Theodore.
Wow.
Theodore.
I would say that nobody has ever given me flowers before, but Killian beat you to it.
Isabel. Killian gave you flower, singular. I gave you flowers, plural. I am still the top gentleman around these parts. Theodore.
You're smiling right now, aren't you?
Isabel. A little. Theodore.
Come in here so I can see it.
Isabel. No. Cameras. Theodore.
Bring your gentleman apprentice and make yourselves invisible.
Isabel.
To do what?
Theodore. With Killian around, nothing. But we could make him leave. Isabel.
And then what?
Theodore.
Fuck.
Theodore.
Fucking fuck.
Theodore.
Nothing at all.
Isabel.
You okay?
Theodore.
Peachy.
You okay, Illy Stone?
Isabel.
I feel like I'm hanging off the edge of a cliff and someone is up there picking off my fingers one by one.
Theodore.
I know it's scary. But you'll always have me to catch you. I'll never let you fall.
She typed out, why? But then immediately deleted it. It didn't matter. Maybe he still thought he owed her his life after what happened during their first year in the library. Or maybe it was because she was his mate. But the truth was, she knew the feeling. If Theodore ever fell, she would catch him in an instant. And not because of her Sigma nature. She would catch him even if it crushed her.
Isabel. Thank you, Theo.
In response, he sent a screenshot of the home screen of his phone. He had saved her flowers as the background picture. She felt her stomach flip, and a stupid, wobbly smile overtook her entire face, remaining until she finally put her phone aside, resigned to the fact that Moses wasn't going to respond at all. Chapter 12. The Two Sides of Torture. Killian couldn't sleep. He tossed the covers from his lap and sat up on the couch, stretching out the kinks in his neck. He glanced toward the bed where Isabel was curled onto her side, her limp arm reaching across the mattress in his direction. She had tossed and turned for a while before finally succumbing to sleep, her subtle scent clawing across the room and begging him to crawl into bed beside her. She smelled distressed, but also dizzyingly, delicately happy, and he wasn't sure which note in her perfume drew him in the hardest. No, it was the delicate, airy sweetness. That was his favorite. He pulled out his phone, staring at the dull reflection of moonlight across his screen before he finally tapped it and brought up the secure messaging app. Killian.
Anyone awake?
He could have called a group meeting, but it wasn't a good idea to mess with the cameras too much when Isabel was in the dorm. They would be watching too closely. It was safer to talk over text. Mikkel's response came first, which was hardly surprising. He slept with his phone on a table right beside his head, the volume turned up as loud as possible, always worried that one of them would get into trouble. In all fairness, they often got into trouble.
Mikkel, admin. Are you okay?
Killian.
I'm fine.
He fiddled with the worn buttons along the side of his phone, waiting for someone to have something to say.
Mikkel,
admin.
Isabel okay?
Killian.
She's asleep. She was exhausted.
Theodore.
I'm awake.
Moses.
Awake now?
Kian.
What's on your mind, Killy?
Oscar.
Awake.
Nico.
Mop.
Nico.
Mop.
Nico.
Up.
Theodore.
Nico is up.
Nico.
Yeah.
Nico.
Puh.
Kaelin. Admin.
Is this about Eve again?
Oscar is typing. Oscar has been muted. Killian.
Yeah.
Moses.
Pretty sure I just heard Oscar's door open. He's already worked up after Carter came out of the shower smelling like, well, you know.
Elijah.
Gabriel, lock your door.
Gabriel.
What?
Gabriel.
I always lock my door.
Gabriel.
Who the fuck is banging on my door?
Gabriel.
Wait. Reading the other messages.
Moses.
What does this have to do with Gabriel?
Theodore.
Why am I always the last person to know everything?
Killian.
Guys.
Kaelin. Admin.
Mikkel.
Mikkel. Admin.
On it.
Nico.
Jesus Christ. Honestly. What happened now?
Elijah.
I thought we all knew.
Nico.
That Carter was touching herself in the shower? Yeah. We might be dumber than you, but we have these things called noses.
Elijah.
That Gabriel was responsible.
Nico.
Say what now?
Moses.
I just heard Theo's door.
Killian.
Guys.
Killian.
You're going to wake her up.
Killian.
Please.
Mikkel, admin.
I think everyone should be nicer to Oscar. He's a good guy, really.
Moses.
Hey, Oscar.
Mikkel, admin.
Hey, dude.
Moses.
Where is Mickey?
Killian's vision of the screen began to blur, his heart pounding for no reason at all. He quickly blinked through the haze, tipping his head back against the couch and counting slowly to 10 as the phone kept vibrating in his palm. On the bed, Isabel's forehead scrunched up in a tight wince, like the giant ball of anxiety he had almost choked on was trying to climb into her while she slept. He closed his eyes and counted again, ignoring his phone until the ball loosened and Isabel's face smoothed out again. Mikkel, admin.
I'm back.
Oscar has been unmuted.
Theodore. Killy?
Theodore.
You okay?
Kian.
All good, Kill?
Nico.
Let me know you're okay or I'm coming in.
He scoffed at the tremble in his fingers, the remnants of the panic that had tried to drag him under. Killian.
I'm good.
Killian.
We need to decide what to do about Eve. She knows everything.
Kaelin, admin.
Our contacts in the OGGB are saying that no new intel has come from Eve or Aaron.
Killian.
Are we still waiting to see if Aaron will talk?
Even typing his ex's name made him want to stumble to the bathroom and throw up, his brain pinching with an immediate headache. Aaron hadn't been the love of his life or anything, but he had been Killian's closest friend at Green Mountain before Killian applied for Ironside. Aaron had always been selfish and indulgent, even manipulative sometimes. And sometimes that manipulation had looked like cruelty. But this was beyond anything Killian could have suspected.
Kaelin, admin. No. Aaron has stuck with the same story. Eve sought him out when she went home for the break, told him you were secretly mated to Isabel, and told him she had a plan to break the bond. Apparently, he didn't know Eve was going to cut her. He thought Isabel's light would manifest on the outside and Eve could snatch it up. But he did nothing to stop her.
Mikkel, admin.
He's repeated that same story over and over, and then he demonstrated Eve's power. They forced him to sign a confession absolving Eve of all responsibility. And now he can't talk anymore.
Killian blew out a sharp breath, his body jolting with the memory of what had happened when the officials pulled him from Ironside.
Killian. I have to tell you all something.
None of them replied, and he gnawed on his lip as he tried to find the right words.
Killian. They didn't really put me up in the officials' building while they questioned Aaron.
Still, they didn't reply, and an awful sinking sensation shot through Killian. They knew. As soon as he was called to the front of the academy and ushered into a car with two silent, suited officials, he knew he was in for a rough interrogation. They had blindfolded him before the car even left the curb, driving around for the better part of the night. It was all for the sake of intimidation, because as soon as they pulled him from the car, he knew he was beneath the academy. His footsteps echoed, the air temperature had dropped,
and they pulled off his blindfold in the hallway outside his interrogation chamber, showcasing a brief flash of the opulence that he knew rested inside the stone dahlia, even though he had never stepped foot inside it before. The floor was a shining mosaic of rare polished stones with glittering pearl and gold accents twisted from wall to wall like luminescent veins. There wasn't a single scuff mark or footprint in the highly reflective surface, only a glittering spatter of soft, warm light from the tiered chandeliers above. The air was lightly perfumed with the faintest hint of an exotic scent that probably intrinsically made people want to spend money, and there was soft music spilling from hidden speakers, crooning at him to relax, even as the officials pushed him into a room and locked the door with stern, unflinching faces. He wasn't sure how long he was kept there, but their process had been intense. At first, they simply questioned him. It was clear they didn't think he was Isabel's mate, and he supposed it made sense, since Theodore had spent almost a week refusing to leave Isabel's hospital bed, clutching her lifeless body against his as though he could somehow assimilate her into his skin. And Killian hadn't torn his best friend apart. But the officials questioned him all the same, and they acted like they were unhappy with the answers they were getting out of him. That was when they brought the shock device in. They slapped electrodes to his skin and tapped a button whenever they decided he was being less than forthcoming. "Just a little jolt," they assured him, while he ground his teeth against the pain. "Research shows it helps to prompt the memory center of your brain. You're an alpha, so you'll recover in no time." They asked him if he had organized the attack. They asked if he was in love with Theodore and wanted Isabel dead. They asked how long he had been stringing along Eve and Aaron and Isabel, and if he had gotten what he wanted. They asked how he had formulated the plan and how he had communicated it to Aaron. And then, suddenly, they changed tack again, asking if he knew who Isabel's mate was. They swapped out their interrogators and continued until he was blacking out between electrocutions. And then it just stopped. They transferred him to the hospital for a wellness check, and he didn't see any of them again. He stared at his phone screen as it went black due to inactivity, realization settling into his gut with a sickening lurch. He tapped on his screen to bring it back to life. "Killian. I thought it was the track team. Killian. I thought it was them interfering in the interrogation to recruit me. Killian. I thought that's why it stopped." Finally, one of them responded. "Elijah." "No. It was Kaelin." "Killian." "What the fuck, Kaelin?" "Kaelin. Admin. Don't start with me. You shouldn't have kept quiet about this for so long." "Killian. I thought we had enough to deal with. I just wanted to wait a little bit." "Killian. What did you give them in exchange?" "Kaelin. Admin. I agreed to one private session." Killian swore roughly, before hiding his phone screen and darting a look to the bed to make sure he hadn't woken up Isabel. The track team had been trying to convince Kaelin to take on private clients since he started at the Stone Dahlia, even going as far as to offer him a larger cut of his room fee. It was the difference between $1,000 and $10,000, but Kaelin continued to refuse. It was somewhat of an unspoken expectation that he would have to do whatever the client wanted if he allowed private sessions. "Killian, did everyone else agree to this?" The responses came immediately. Mikkel, admin. "No." Oscar. "Fuck no." Gabriel. "None of us agreed." Elijah. "Kaelin didn't call for a group vote. He told us what he had done after he did it." Killian. "You should have fucking left me there." Kaelin, admin. "This was my decision, and it's final. I can handle one private session." Killian.
How do you plan on doing that?
Kaylin, admin.
I'll figure something out. Stop worrying about me, Killian. You've got enough on your plate. And it's my job to worry about you. Not the other way around.
Elijah.
I've already figured it out.
Kaylin, admin.
Do not bring that up again.
Elijah.
It's a perfect solution.
Kian.
First I'm hearing of a perfect solution.
Nico.
Elijah's plans always work. What's the problem?
Elijah.
There's no problem. Kaylin just thinks he can refuse until I come up with a different plan that doesn't threaten his delicate sensibilities.
Kaylin, admin.
Watch your mouth.
Elijah.
Save your bossy voice for Isabel. You're going to need it.
Theodore.
What? What does this have to do with Isabel?
Gabriel.
Ah, yes, that makes sense.
Moses.
We'll be the judges of what makes sense.
Moses.
After you explain everything to us.
Gabriel.
The club is trying to recruit Isabel. If she asks Kaylin to be her sponsor, she can shadow him to all his engagements, even the private ones. If some rich cougar was hoping to get her claws into Kaylin by spending a small fortune on a few hours in a private room with him, Isabel's presence will prove disruptive.
Kian.
So? What's so bad about that plan?
Kaylin.
Admin.
That wasn't the plan.
Elijah.
The plan was a little more comprehensive.
Gabriel.
Okay, never mind. I'm with Kaylin on this one.
Theodore.
No need to get comprehensive.
Moses.
Can we go back to a few minutes ago when Gabriel was actually wrong about something?
Gabriel.
No.
Elijah.
If Kaylin changed his act, we could mitigate all risk. I think the comprehensive plan is better.
Oscar.
Isabel fucking Carter is a virgin Sigma who still can't meet our eyes while she's talking to us half the time. She isn't in the same league as a Shibari bunny.
Moses.
Bunny, huh?
Gabriel.
Awkward.
Elijah.
Freudian slip, Oscar?
Oscar.
I'll Freudian slip my fist through your teeth.
Oscar.
As soon as I'm done with Gabriel.
Killian.
Where are you right now?
Oscar.
In Gabriel's room.
Nico.
What the fuck, Gabe? You let him in?
Gabriel.
He was being loud. And I never touched Isabel. He has nothing to break.
Killian.
Then what is he doing?
Gabriel.
He's currently standing in the corner, glaring at me and trying to figure out how I could possibly have anything to do with Isabel touching herself in the shower when I wasn't even there.
Mikkel, admin.
For crying out loud, Oscar, don't make me come down there again.
Oscar.
I haven't heard him yet. Everyone keep your panties on.
Moses.
Speaking of panties, want to search Gabe's hiding places while you're in there?
Theodore.
Isabel isn't ready, Kaylin.
Kaylin. Admin.
I know.
Elijah.
You could get her ready.
Kaylin. Admin.
I know.
Nico.
But you won't, right?
Kaylin.
Admin. I need to get a better gauge of where she stands with all of this. She already asked me to be her sponsor.
Killian.
Don't push her.
Killian navigated out of the chat and flopped back onto the couch, staring at the shadowed patterns on the roof. Isabel was in good hands with Kaylin, and they all knew it. But there were parts of the club that even Kaylin couldn't protect her from. Things were getting more complicated, but a weight had just been lifted off his chest. He didn't usually keep secrets from them for so long, but he had thought it would be better if all their focus was on protecting Isabel. He should have realized they already knew. Isabel woke up an hour before her alarm was set to go off, her mind buzzing. She checked her phone just to make sure nothing terrible had happened while she slept, and then she snuck into Killian's bathroom to get ready for the day. She was halfway out of the dorm before she paused, remembering that Mikkel had ordered them to go everywhere in pairs or groups. Thankfully, Elijah also seemed to be an early riser. He padded out of his room in rumpled sweats and mussed hair, heading toward the stairs leading up to the kitchen before he turned, pinning her with a look, his nose twitching. He assessed her quickly, before mumbling, "Give me a minute," and disappearing back into his room. He reemerged, dressed for dance practice, his bag slung over his arm, and met her at the door.
"Where to this early? You don't have practice for an hour."
"I thought I'd check on Sophia and Luis."
"All right."
He pushed the door open, holding it and nodding for her to go first.
"How'd you sleep?"
he asked as they reached the stairs. She felt awkward trying to make small talk with him, but he didn't seem to suffer from the same problem. He peppered her with polite, surface questions until they reached the chapel, where they both stopped short inside the doorway. The guardian, Maya, was vacuuming around the dais, an old set of headphones strapped to her head, her foot tapping absently. She stopped when she saw them, shifting the headphones to her neck and turning off the vacuum.
"Carter,"
she said, her tone surprised. Her steady, gold-ringed mahogany gaze moved to Elijah.
"Reed, is it? I apologize. My son is a big fan, but I don't keep up with the show much."
Elijah only reclined his head a little in acknowledgement.
"Maya Rosales."
She wound up the vacuum cord and strode over, sticking her hand out to Elijah.
"A pleasure," he said, pretending not to notice her hand. "I've heard things." "A skeptic, huh?"
She chuckled, amused by his cool reception, before turning her attention back to Isabel.
"What brings you here this morning? Have any other artifacts appeared?"
Her eyes darted right to Isabel's chest, even though the chain was hidden by her overlarge shirt.
"Nothing since Sophia and Luis last updated you,"
Isabel answered blandly.
"I am a guardian, Carter."
Maya's lips thinned.
"My children might have a knack for gifted occult, but they don't have my years of experience. Of course they consulted me."
"And what do you have to say?" Isabel asked, crossing her arms. The woman had only been polite to her, but it made Isabel extremely uncomfortable that Maya and her children were walking around with the knowledge that both of Isabel's eyes had changed. After Eve, she stiffened, forcing the thoughts out of her mind to concentrate on Maya, who was pushing out little currents of anxiety to tease into Isabel's chest. It felt different to when Isabel's father bulldozed over her with his emotions, or when the Dorm A Alphas sent their emotions colliding against her body. This was softer, subtler, as though Maya was as practiced as Isabel at keeping her emotions under lock and key. Maybe she was. Her entire occupation was maintaining a dead religion and a group of gods that most gifted had long forgotten. She likely had to suffer just as much ridicule as Isabel did for being a Sigma.
"I think that the gods don't bother with curses,"
Maya answered.
"But there is one god who must maintain the balance when the other gods go overboard with their gifts."
Isabel nodded, trying to recall the name of the god Sophia and Luis had shown her.
"Stygian,"
Maya supplied.
"Right."
Isabel glanced around the chapel, but it wasn't like any of the shadows were about to shift away from the wall and turn into robed celestial beings. It was just a chapel. Not even a very elaborate one, considering it belonged to Ironside.
"The mysterious god." "The Duskfall Warden,"
Maya corrected.
"The gifted don't have a god of mystery, just as we don't have a goddess of love or a god of the seas. Our gods aren't so simple as that, with only one segment of the world they're relegated to. The Duskfall Warden is named for the fact that he guards the space between light and dark."
Sometimes, even the space between life and death. Without him, we have no balance.
Isabel wanted to bite her tongue, but the words spilled out anyway.
You call this world balanced?
The gods don't exist to serve us, Carter. We exist to serve them. They give us our abilities, our gifted blood. And in return, we are supposed to keep their temples and follow their edicts.
I'm curious.
Elijah spoke up suddenly, his voice calm and soft, definitely not as riled up as Isabel felt.
The chain you took from Isabel, has it shown any signs of sentience?
None at all, Maya answered immediately. It was not intended for me.
Have you studied it further?
Elijah pressed.
Of course.
Maya looked him over a little more thoroughly, arching a thin, elegant brow.
It's identical to Aphelina's chain. I've cross-referenced it across every picture I could find, and all the written accounts of bonded people receiving Aphelina's chain in the past.
It can be gifted to more than one person at the same time.
Elijah's expression was almost bored, but he spoke quickly, his tone bordering on sharp.
It would seem so.
Maya brushed some cleaning dust from her faded, button-down shirt.
The chain always disappears after some time, but it has never fused itself to a person's body. Not in any record I can find.
Did you find any records of the chain being cut or deformed?
Elijah barely paused to digest Maya's words.
No,
Maya admitted, but Elijah was already speaking again.
What was so distinctive about the chain that you're so sure it's the same as those mentioned in your records?
It's not a metal of this world.
Maya looked amused now.
And how did you test that?
Elijah's disappointment reached out to Isabel, like he had already concluded that Maya couldn't possibly verify what she was saying. Maya responded, with her small smile curving out even further. Her amusement over Elijah's rapid questioning obvious now, with just a small spark of something that might have been approval or respect glinting in her expression.
The officials are as interested in Carter's unique situation as I am. They allowed me to make contact with a certain professor at UCLA, who invited me into his lab for the day. He showed me how to test the metal, and I managed to convince him that the test itself was confidential.
What kind of test? Isabel asked, as Elijah